Hello. Welcome. I'm Sandra W. I'm an addict. I'm from Washington, D.C. Would y'all please get seated so we can start the meeting? Once again, we all know that meetings begin and end on time. Please be seated. Let's have a moment of silence, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me serenity to know that I can change, the courage to change the things that I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you. Once again, my name is Sandra. I'm from Washington, D.C., and I want to welcome everyone to my city. I have a few announcements to make. The first, for tonight's meeting, all scooters and wheelchairs will enter the hall by way of elevator near room 103. I'm going to repeat that again. For tonight's meeting, all scooters and wheelchairs will enter the hall by way of the elevator near room 103. The Marriott Connector Tunnel will close at 3 p.m. today. Registration and pre-registration merchandise closes at 6 p.m. today. There is a reserved seating area in the main meeting room for volunteers, trusted servants, and staff. Since they might be busy with their work assignments, please honor that and refrain from attempting to sit in the reserved areas. We really do appreciate that. The Lost and Found is located at the convention information booth in the convention center lobby. After hours, Lost and Found, lost items will be turned in to the operations office in 208. The convention information booth will close at 4 p.m. today. So if you think any of your lost items is there, please come before 4 p.m. Please, please do not smoke on the loading docks. Smoking on the docks may result in being asked to leave the center. And if you are in the appropriate smoking area, please use the butt cans to put your cigarette butts in. All right, set up for alternative merchandise will start at 7 a.m. Sunday. The alternative merchandise store will open at 8 a.m. Sunday in Hall D registration area. Thank you. So we're gonna start. We're gonna have a moment of silence before I start introducing the readers, followed by the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Our first reader, Sherelle W. from D.C., has been asked to read Who is an Addict?
It's so good to be back home. Y'all prayed me back up in these rooms. Okay. Who is an addict? My name is Sherelle, and I'm an addict. Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know our whole life and thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, the getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and we use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always jails, institutions, and death. Thank you.
That's my first reader who's a newcomer. She has 50 days, y'all. Thank you. My next reader is Ari from Mexico. She will read What is the NA Program?
Hi, I'm Ari, and I am from Mexico, and I am an addict. What is the Narcotics Anonymous Program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance at any time. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We're not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Another newcomer, y'all. She has 5 months clean. Ross C. from Maryland has been asked to read the portion of our literature.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rosalind, and I'm an addict. And it's my honor to serve you. I'll be reading literature from Living Clean, page 81, A Space for Us, Women Recovering Together. We arrive at Narcotics Anonymous hoping for survival. What we find is love, courage, a sense of connection, and a sense of direction. All our lives, we had looked for the peace and safety we experience in recovery. As we seek our higher power's will for us, we come to an understanding of our purpose. Spiritual awakening is a process. Maybe it is what the whole process is about. We nurture our awakening spirits, and we know that we are finally free to live in grace, integrity, and dignity.
Hi. Once again, I'm Shranda, still an addict, a recovering addict. I am so darn nervous up here, y'all. They told me that I could share for 5 minutes. I don't want to do that because if I get started, they'll probably kick me off the stage because I won't stop. All right. So I am so grateful and happy to be here. Every time I go to an NA meeting, every time I go to a convention, I get goosebumps. them asking me to stand up in front of all y'all women that I always felt had much more than I did, look better than me, dress better than me, talk better than me, all those things made me very nervous. Today, guess what, y'all? I don't care if y'all look better than me, talk better than me, but none of that. It just don't matter. What matters is that I stay clean one day at a time. There have been so many women in my life since I've been in this fellowship. I mean, I can start naming them. I know I shouldn't say their name, but I have to give props to my first sponsor, rest in peace, Sandra H. She took me and guided me, and she was a newcomer sponsor, and that's what I've tried to do. Help the newcomer one day at a time. Somebody did that for me. Okay, y'all. Y'all know my story. My story is probably just like y'all's. I used to live and lived to use. I started with Viceroy cigarettes. Oh, a lot of y'all heard Viceroy cigarettes. So I'm not the oldest person in this group then, right? And I ended up with crack and heroin, all right? But today, I have nothing. I don't smoke cigarettes, and I don't do drugs. Just for today. And I thank y'all for listening to me. And once again, I want to say, welcome to my city, Washington, D.C. I've said enough. So what I would do at this time, I would like to introduce our first speaker, Wilhelmina from the Netherlands.
Hello, everyone. My name is Wilhelmina, and I'm from the Netherlands. And I see my girl women over there. It's so great that they're here. I can't believe to be standing here. I was very, very afraid when Veronica, she called me to ask to speak at this convention. And I thought, who am I? I'm that small. I don't have a story. So I was just so nervous. But still, I'm standing here because you just never say no to service. And that's what we are doing. And as long as I remember that this is not about me, that this is about carrying the message to us all. And my higher power is with me, and all will be well. I love being here, I don't know, it's such an amazing experience. I'm from the Netherlands and we are very tiny. Our fellowship is tiny. And then to come here with all these addicts from all over the world, it's like mind-blowing. And then us being the women in recovery, oh, I just so need you. I cannot be without you. The women in recovery. They asked us to speak for 40 minutes, so that's like a long time, but I will do my best, and I guess I will just start with my life story, what happened and how I came to Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I had a very happy childhood. I had a mother, a father, a brother, and a sister. And I was very, very happy, and I was the best of the class at school, and my father was very proud of me. And then one day when I was 13, my father didn't come home. He died from a heart attack at his work. So that was the first thing that was very, very, I didn't know how to work that out, me, my sister, and my mother. And then in the same time period, like I'm talking about like 2 or 3 months or so, bad things has happened to me. You know, this is a women's meeting. Normally when I share at a normal meeting, I don't share everything, but here at the women's meeting, I can just share everything. Thank you so much. So what happened is, you know, first, the best friend of my sister, she came to me and told me that the father who died is not my biological father. And then it was like a couple of weeks after I was abused by a boyfriend of my aunt, and that kept going on. And in our culture, I'm from Indonesia, but I'm born in the Netherlands, they use a voodoo, and they have done voodoo on me. So it was a very dark period. I lost my identity. I lost everything. I didn't know who I was anymore. I didn't even think anymore. And I just thought I will just, you know, pretend that it's not there, like deny it. And then I started using alcohol, but, you know, that just didn't do it for a couple of years. And then when I was 16 or 17, I found heroin, and that did it. That really killed. I really thought I found my solution, you know, like, wow, like, this is it. So I don't have a worry anymore, and everything is fine, and I don't have to feel, and all of that, you know. But then, of course, I got addicted, and I couldn't stop, and I was using 24/7. And by the time that I was 19, I was living with a coke dealer in The Hague, in the Netherlands, only because it made it easier for me to exchange the drugs by the dealers. And it was pure cocaine, so it was, I got the pure. So it made it. It made it really easy for me. But then it was, I don't know what it was. I guess it was already a higher power, like when I was 23, that I was thinking and wondering to myself, because my father, the not my biological father who raised me, he told me to always be independent, to be independent from a man and from the state. And then I thought, you know, that's the opposite what I'm doing right now. I'm dependent on this man. I'm dependent on my drugs. And I'm lost. I'm totally lost. And from one day to another, I just decided with a best friend of mine to go to Ibiza. That's an island in Europe, to detox. So the two of us went to Ibiza, and I had a cold turkey. And it was like, all of us know, like, it's really hard. It took like 15, 16 days, and not sleeping, and pain in my bones, and it was very painful. And then when I came home to The Hague, I was 23, and I thought, I'm going to do what my daddy always told me. So I started to study. I started to build up a career. And everything went well. But I didn't have a program. So now, in hindsight, when I look back, I was like totally obsessed. Obsessed with studying, obsessed with working. I was a workaholic. And then I met my husband. He's still my husband today. And I was clean without a program. And we were just living together. We had our work, and that is our life. But then when I was like 33, like, it was very, very weird, but every night, at 3 o'clock sharp, every night, I would get a nightmare. And the nightmares, they would go on and on and on, and I would have to run to the bathroom to throw up. But I didn't know what was going on. And the only thing I thought is, well, I know one thing that can kill this. So I went out there again to the dealers to take my drugs, and it helped. You know, because I was just dozing off, and I didn't feel anymore. And then I thought, because I still have my work, I was a functioning addict, I thought I will only use on Friday. And then I will recover on Saturday, and then Sunday, and then Monday I go to work. But you know, the most difficult thing of everything is control. And I thought I had control of it. I heard somebody ever saying that there is a couple living in Switzerland, and they are both heroin users, and they can control it. And I thought, well, that's me. So if they can, then I can do it too. So I went on and on for years and years. And in hindsight, when I think of it, when you try to control your using, that's the most painful thing of all. It's impossible to control it. And I guess I found my I reached my rock bottom when my mother was ill, and the doctor called me and said that I had to hurry and get to the hospital very quick. And I get out of my house, jumped in the car, and instead of going to the hospital, I went to my dealer. So after that, when I arrived at the hospital, my mother was already dead. And that, I still get goosebumps when I say it out loud. I wasn't there, you know, when she died. I found that my drugs more important. And that was my rock bottom. And I then told my husband that, you know, I want to find a solution, and I want to detox. And we went to several clinics in the Netherlands, in Rotterdam, in Amsterdam. But there were like waiting times for like 3 months. And we didn't have that time because I just needed to detox and go back to work. So... we went on the internet and we found a detox in London. So we flew over there and I detoxed there. And I so remember we had group sessions there in London and in the detox center. And everybody in the group would share something, and I just didn't, because I didn't know what to share. And then the counselor, she pointed out to me and she said, "So Wilhelmina, who are you? Are you a junk, once a junkie, always a junkie?" So I was so, so angry. So I started to scream at her and scream what has happened, and everything came out. And then after that, I was just so confused and afraid. And I ran to my room, and I didn't dare to come out of my room anymore. And then the next day or so, I don't really quite remember, but the psychiatrist came to my room, and I was then 43 years old. And then, you know, he took everything out of me. I mean, I told him the story. I told him what has happened when I was 13 and how it happened and everything. The most crazy thing that happened after is that the next day when I woke up, I had a memory loss. I woke up, I really thought I was 13, and I don't remember anything anymore. And the psychiatrist, he called my husband, and because in 1 week or so, I had to go home. And he explained it to my husband. But the most beautiful thing that happened in that detox center was that H&I of Narcotics Anonymous. I will never ever forget that day that H&I of Narcotics Anonymous came in, and they told us that this is a disease and there is a solution and we can go to meetings. And first I was still thinking, well, I don't need meetings. I just detox, I go home, I go back to work and I don't need anything, you know. I still was thinking that. But then when my husband picked me up at the detox center, I didn't really recognize him, but somewhere I felt that it was okay. So I went home with him to Rotterdam, where we live. And then after 4 or 5 days, very, very quickly, of course, I had cravings and I wanted to use again. And then I thought, oh, wait a minute. So these guys came in and they said that there is a solution. So they said that there is a helpline in Amsterdam. So I looked it up and I called the helpline in Amsterdam and I ended up in the meeting in Amsterdam on a Thursday night. And there were only 7 people there, so tiny that we were, and most of them were English. And there was one guy there, his name is Ted, he's from New Orleans. He's the guy that set up NA in the Netherlands in 1988. So he was there and he had 17 years clean. And I looked at him and I thought, wow, 17 years, it's like, and there was somebody there, he had 30 days and somebody else like 3 months. And I thought, this cannot be true because once a junkie, always a junkie. You know, so I didn't understand, but then I did feel very much at home and they were very, very welcoming me. And within that time, we only had 8 meetings in Amsterdam, and they were all in English. So they were very welcoming and very, very warm. And I always stayed at Ted his place before going to the meeting because I was doing my 90 meetings in 90 days. So every day driving, so in the morning waking up, going to work, and then go home, have something to eat, and go to the meeting in Amsterdam. And from Rotterdam to Amsterdam, it's like a 1 hour drive. And I did that every day for 90 days. And that kept me clean. I mean, you can say, well, great that you've done it. And it's tough to do it. But otherwise, if I wouldn't do it, I wouldn't be standing here. It is the only way. And after that, after a year or so, I was starting to get tired of, you know, driving to Amsterdam every time. So I started the first meeting outside of Amsterdam. In Rotterdam, and I say I, but that's not right, it's we. So I was from Rotterdam and the other friends were from Amsterdam and they came every Tuesday night to Rotterdam to support us. And so we set up the first meeting and then the second meeting and then the third meeting. And then the most beautiful thing of all is people from the south of Holland and from the east of Holland, they heard about the meetings outside of Amsterdam in Rotterdam. So they came to the meeting and they started to set up their own meetings in the whole of the Netherlands. And when you think of it, it is mind-blowing because I came into the rooms in 2003 and there were only 8 meetings. And now it's 2024, and we have 380 meetings. In the Netherlands, it's like mind-blowing. And then we started to set up the first area outside of Amsterdam. So that's area Rotterdam, and then area South, and then we set up our region, and then our fellowship started to grow. And then when we hear what the lady was reading about living clean to live in grace and integrity and dignity. That is what I found here in Narcotics Anonymous. And it's not something, you know, it's so natural by keep on giving it away, and we all of us by keeping giving it away, I get so happy. I mean, my life is like, I don't need anything else. Of course, I do my work, I have my family, and I have my life outside of NA, but here within NA, this is my heart. This is what keeps me clean. I'm a Buddhist, so it is a natural thing to give it away. And my husband is here with me, and he is a normal person. he's not an addict, and we are married for 33 years. And so it's very, very precious, you know. He knows me from when I was clean, but without a program. And then I started using, but he didn't have a clue. And then I asked him to find a detox clinic, and then now I'm clean and in Narcotics Anonymous. And today I'm 21 years clean. And my husband, he fell in love with Narcotics Anonymous. This is his first world convention. And now he's saying to me, we go to every world convention from us now. it's really, really beautiful. And the thing is also, we are here with a bunch of the people from the Netherlands, and yeah. And we are here to promote our European convention. Which is going to happen next year in July, in the third week of July, in Rotterdam, in the Netherlands. So I hope lots of people will come. You know, and about the steps. The steps is the heart of our program. And without the steps, you know, by only going to meetings and going to gatherings, I will not keep myself clean. So I did work the steps, and the most beautiful thing is that all my character defects that I have developed to protect me when I was still using and when I was still living in the black days, but the steps, they really taught me how to live. And the most beautiful thing is that I didn't have a clue. I only came to the meeting in Amsterdam because I knew I could not keep myself clean on my own. So I went to the meeting in Amsterdam, but I thought that the meetings will keep me clean. It did keep me clean, but what it gave me a totally different way of life. It's really, really wonderful. It is beyond my wildest dreams. And it doesn't matter what is going on. My life is beyond the wildest dreams. You know, now that I see at the clock and there is still time. But I thought I was not going to share this, but I am going to share this because I thought it was too painful to share, but I'm going to share it because it happened. I have this friend in Narcotics Anonymous, and I know him for 10 years, but I never let him like really close out of intuition, I guess. And then one day last year in January, he called me up, and then he said that his son has tried to commit suicide. So I let him in. I let him into my house. I let him into my life. And then it took 2 months for his son in the hospital to recover. And then in the third month or so, he said he's going to sponsor this boy of 17 years old. And this boy also has tried to commit suicide. And I thought, well, he knows what it is to, as a father, to protect a young boy. So I went on with him, and it's great. But then by September or October, he abused this boy. And I couldn't understand it. I couldn't work it out. I couldn't emotionally work it out. And, you know, he was arrested because the boy went to the police. So this fellow, he was arrested. And then it seems that there are two other boys that also made a file to the police. So he's still in jail now. But then the police they called me and asked if I can testify. So I went to the police station, and they asked me things, and I told them everything. And they also gave me answers because I also had questions. But it turned out that this man, he didn't have a son at all. You know, so this really shook me in recovery, and I didn't know how to work it out. And that was in October. He was arrested in November, and I was like all over the place. I couldn't understand that these things could happen. And I went ill. I had a diagnose, thyroid cancer. So but then in the meantime, I had to go to do service for the European delegates meeting. That's the zone of NA. So I went with my alt RD, so we were traveling together, and he helped me to work this out. He made jokes about, you know, we in a fellowship, what happens, and people are sick and they come sick into the fellowship, but they are addicts too. And that helped me to overcome this. And after that, after the service, I had to, you know, go to the hospital, and they operated me, and that's why I have this scarf always on my neck. But I have to share this, because these things also, it's possible that these things happen in Narcotics Anonymous, and it is about us, it is about me to recover and to be able to tell this story, because this is a message too. Because I was always on and on thinking, how could I not have seen this, that he was doing this to this boy, and what was I doing that I didn't see it? And I've learned a lot from it, and from then on, and from now on, when I'm at meetings and there are younger people, I will always, always be, you know, protective of them. Because in the Netherlands, we are one of the countries that we have a very big young community. It's very, very great. Just in August, they had their youth convention. And there they are, from the Netherlands. So we really need to protect the youngsters when they come into the meetings. But as I said, you know, the steps, they have really, really changed me, the steps 4, 5, 6, and 7. I'm not a victim anymore. I've survived this, and it all happened, but I'm standing here strong. Because really and truly, what has happened last year, I thought I would not overcome it. And the most dangerous thing is that when I came out of the hospital and I was recovering, I was starting to think, oh, I'm not going to meetings anymore because I'm too scared, or things, you know, like that. But thank God, with the help of my sponsor, my higher power, and my sponsees, I went back to the meetings. And I'm, you know, I have to say that things happen, and they are very dark. And when I come out of it on the other way, I'm a woman of strength. So I hear my friend's voice, Twan. Hello, Twan, I love you. Oh, and I love all of you here in this room. You know, I'm not that great speaker. I cannot speak for long. But at least I have told my story and also the dark part. And I would just want to thank you for being here and for all the love that we share together. Thank you.
Thank you, Wilhelmina. Thank you. All right, our next speaker is Billy P. from Santa Fe, New Mexico.
My name is Billy. I'm an addict. Not only am I an addict, I got clean in NA. And I would lie if I didn't tell you and put you on location to let you know how nervous I am too. This is the biggest honor in the world. What a privilege to be a correspondent to bring you the good news. And yet, I asked my sponsor, well, should I look at Kathy? Should I look at Crystal? What should I do? She said, yes, look at one person, yourself as a newcomer. I do want to start by thanking WCNA 38, World Service, the staff, the board, every volunteer that folded every t-shirt and put every mug in a bag. What have you done? What a party. What a magnificent convention this is. 20,000 of us. You've given us the space that we've always wanted as women and as addicts to be together. I do also want to mention, this is a little bit of, it's not politically or socially correct. We're supposed to age gracefully, I know this. But I have to say, if I'd have known about the Jumbotron when they asked me to speak, I would have ordered a facelift right away. That is scary. I came in here Thursday night and I just took a deep breath and I thought, oh boy. So it is a privilege, it is an honor to come and give you the good news. And here it is. This is the message. If you want to go out and have a burrito and come back later, this is it. You don't have to use anymore if you don't want to. And the fortunate fact for us, we don't have to use anymore, even if we do want to. Come on. NA has given me a second chance to live a first-class life. Wilhelmina talked about it. Honestly, I've become the kind of person I always thought dope would make me. I'm pretty comfortable wherever I am, whoever I'm with, and whatever I'm doing. I'm a little nervous now, but we're going to get through it together. I just want to reminisce, really. I'm not going to fill up 40 minutes, but I will talk to you a little bit about the early days coming in to NA as a woman, as a lesbian. And as somebody who had a subterranean existence, isn't that a nice euphemism for it wasn't the happy hooker, but it was relying on the kindness of strangers. Another euphemism. More than once, my sisters found me on 14th Street during the rock bottom of my addiction. And my father came to jail more than once, and I couldn't hide my tracks because the jumpsuits had short sleeves over here at DC jail. So my bottom was long. Okay. Just like my childhood, it was long. It lasted 32 years. And you had something for me. When I finally got out of jail for the last time, and my friend Carolyn G, we called her Brownie in the street, she said, "Why don't you come and go to a meeting?" I was still drinking methadone 6 years in, still shooting dope every day. And I came to a meeting of NA. I thought, oh my God, there's Liz, there's Reggie. I saw people. I wonder where they were. Sitting sweetly in a circle at Howard University Hospital. 7 o'clock. Yes, Brother Rick was there. He was the ringleader. We needed somebody. And I came in, I mean, look, I was not always, let's put it this way, I was not always the 129.5 pounds of sheer magnificence that stands before you today. Oh, no. I weighed 110. My diet consisted of Dottie's banana pudding, RC Cola and M&M's. Boom, that was it. And I thought I looked good. I had hip boots on, hair down to my netherworld. And, you know, I didn't and I wasn't. And you told me, look, when you're no good for nobody and you have no place to go, you're just right for us. Come on in. We already know your story. It's your duty to fill us in on the details. And so it began. You know, early on, I was taken to the World Convention, Narcotics Anonymous, 1983, Vista Hotel, New York City, World Trade Center. And my not yet sponsor, but my soon-to-be sponsor, one-day sponsor, Carmelita, shared the women's meeting. And she dragged my frail little butt up on stage for some reason, and I was frozen, of course. And my life changed early on. We talk about spiritual awakening or unloosening or whatever. But it was happening all the time, every day, when I was with you. And Doreen spoke, Jimmy Kay was there. But you know who I ran toward after he spoke, and it was the last time we'd ever had a non-addict speak, Father Dan Egan, the junkie priest. And I don't know, it was just, he said, when he spoke, he said, I ran into some parishioners out in the lobby, and they said, Father, who are all these people? They look so disparate and different, and what is this group? And he said, well, he thought about it. He said, they're all survivors of a concentration camp. Accurate. So after he was done, I ran up to him. And he hugged me and he held me close. And he just said, stay with God. And it shook me. And it warmed me. And it changed me. And when I say God, I'm talking about a very expansive interpretation. I'm talking about you, Narcotics Anonymous, and the power of love and healing and transformation. And you could feel it in the rooms when you walked in. Again, the people were sitting listening to each other one at a time. And there was a dog food commercial on TV, and I'm dating myself, way back in the days of Johnny Carson and whatnot. And they talked about the high pro glow. You had it. There was little balls of light flashing out your eyes and bouncing off your shoulders, and you were just okay. You were at peace. You were relaxed. I knew that you had found something. I could feel it in the room, just like we feel it here since we've come to town. So we went to New York, and then we went to Chicago the next year. And in those days, we had to bid to bring the World Convention to our community. And we had it every year, and I had forgotten that. And so we put up a good bid in Chicago. And at the end of our plea, one of our members, a man, I don't even remember who, jumped up on the table and said, you've got to come to Washington. We've got addicts dying back there. We got the bid, and it came to D.C. in 1985. And similar to Wilhelmina, we had one meeting a day. We had Howard University Hospital. We may have had Psychiatric Institute. Trust Clinic hadn't started yet. But what happened was, after the convention, like 1 or 2 months, and I was chairperson of new meetings, we went from 7 meetings a week within a couple months to 16. This is what happens for an area. This is what happens when we spread the good news. And I want to take this moment, because I might forget, I want to take this moment to remind us all that when we go home to our community, to our little village, to our sleepy hamlet, when we go home to our cities and our town, tell them what you experienced here. Share it. Share how you felt. Share what you saw, what you heard. I've been moved many, many times already. Last night, Petra moved me in the meeting. To come to this country and not speak in your foreign tongue and to get up here and share takes courage. And to share the hard stuff, this is what they taught us. This is exactly what we were taught. As women coming into NA, they told us over and over, it's not about being cute. It's about rolling up our sleeves and doing the work. And we had a lot of fun. We had a place we used to go Saturday night and dance, Pathfinders. My friend Peggy, and we'd dance every Saturday night, and my friend Peggy said, you could tell what part of D.C. a guy came from by the way he would hand dance. Oh, yeah, Peggy told me. As we said, we got our life in that place. It was so much fun. The same man that owned it, Chisholm, he owned a clean, recovering strip club. All male dancers. Wow. I mean, we drank our little Diet Cokes and had a ball. And I'd go with all my girlfriends, my best friends, Kathy and Wendy and everybody. And who would they pick up? Who would the dancer pick up and throw around the room? The gay girl. He'd pick me. We had so much fun. It's interesting to be in a place with 20,000 of us, and in the old days, you know, a lot of us are older here at this conference. I know you've noticed. And we cut our teeth on conferences, right? The regionals, the world conventions that used to occur every year, our unity days. So it's interesting to hang out and not know anybody. You know, it's like, I gotta stand here, maybe I'll see someone. No, there's so many of us. But I've been fortunate to run into some women I know from Zoom only since the pandemic. And my friends from Texas and Missouri. Oh yeah, Hawaii. I mean, it's really cool to meet people that you've only met in Hollywood Squares. And I like Zoom. I'm not ready to let go. I know it doesn't work for everybody, but I will say this, how wonderful for the new woman and man to be able to hold the baby, make dinner, and be on a meeting at the same time. Come on. I've been all over the world with Zoom. I like it. And I like to have both in my diet. So when we were young in NA, you know, got to get a sponsor. Because I know not all of us are old like me in this room and have been around and around. We've got some new people here, and this is why we're here, for you. And we were told, find a woman to represent your life. Not a career counselor, not a financial advisor, not a couples therapist, but someone who has complete permission to tell you the truth about yourself as they see it. Someone with a voice louder than the one in your own head. A lot of us had picker problems when we came here. And we talked about the choices we made with the opposite, or in my case, the same sex. And the choices were weird. For me, they were weird from a young age. This is embarrassing, but it gives you a little perspective. When I was about 18, I found a guy in Sausalito. He was in his 60s. This is how I found partners or couples or intrigues, let's be real. And he was in his 60s. He told me he was the mayor of Sausalito. Of course, he was the town drunk. But he looked at me and he said, I'm going to tell you something. He looked deep in my eyes when I first met him. He said, your nipple is the same circumference as your navel. And I thought, oh, he's right. This guy knows something. Sad. I know I'm telling on myself, but this is how I came up in the ranks of idiocy.
to place, as I would welcome in a fresh specimen. It would go like this. Oh, you don't have a lot going on and you tend to use people? Come on in, you're just my type. You like sex? Me too. You like money? I don't have much, but I'll give it to you. And you want to spend a lot of time? Okay, I'll spend all my time. So after I've given all that away, here, take my brain, because I ain't using it anyway. That was me. And then I get here, and they say, you know, try to abstain from sex your first year. Well, I didn't quite make it. But the truth was, if I had sex, I was in love. And if it was good sex, it was true love. So I've always needed a strong sponsor. I approached Carmelita. I don't know, I screwed up my courage. These women would sit in the meetings, Doreen, Carmelita, and Carol. They had like 7 years when I came, they're big time. And they would sit in the meeting at Howard and they'd nod out. And we were telling our pitiful little stories left and right, you know. Well, the job, the boyfriend, the girlfriend was sad. And toward the end of the meeting, those big heads would rear up. And they would step on our toes gently, one by one. They'd go around the room. It was like you kind of wanted to be there, but you kind of wanted to run the hell away, too. And in no uncertain terms, they gave us what we used to call life-saving information. They taught us how to be upright. Stand upright and be upright in life. When we got off the mark, they'd pull our coat, as they said. And when we went way off the mark, they would talk to us, and they would talk about their experience. I faced Carmelita early on, and I asked her, would you be my sponsor? And she said, no. She said, I want you to go to Maryland and ask that white girl, Annie B. You've lived with black people a long time, and I want you to find out who you are. And I said, well, are you trying to say I'm not black? Spiritual unloosening right there. Annie B., my great love of life, became my sponsor. And then as we grew together and became friends, Carmelita accepted me in the fold, tucked me right under her armpit, and there I stayed for a long time. We need each other. We really, really need each other. You know, when we get clean, they talk about service. And we don't know what, I mean, in the beginning, yes, we cleaned ashtrays. You know, we set up chairs, made the coffee, sponsored, went to area service if we were fearless. And we did our part because we were taught. The service is part of what makes our life worthwhile and meaningful. And, you know, my life progressed since those first months and those first years. and my picker got better. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about today. I've met people, lifelong friends in Narcotics Anonymous, and as Wilhelmina said, you are the center of my life. My family, my love for my brother and my sisters, my wife, my beautiful, talented, smart, wonderful wife. And all my friends here, it's been stunning, the amount of love that we receive and that we learn to give. And when you talk about service, I've been fortunate to do the kind of service where we walk each other home, and I think you know what I mean. I want you to know that as joyful and as heart-bursting as life is and can be, I feel especially free and warm and happy this weekend. And in the last few years, that has been the exception, not the rule in my case. We all go through stuff. Ill health, spouse's ill health, and family's ill health, and so it goes. We have been taught service and connection and presence, and because of that, we're good to do this work. We are okay with caring for people, and I'm in a situation now at home where I'm caring for my wife. And she was diagnosed 5.5 years ago with memory loss. And I say this clearly because somebody might be going through this here today. And I want you to know that I fail every day as a partner and a spouse. My patience wears, my kindness disappears and evaporates. And I start all over again, because we can do that here. We learn to do that. Start the day, start the hour over again. So in every day, even though it may not be pleasant or as high an experience as we're having here, I find cracks of joy. I find little cracks, and I suck the marrow right out of them every day. That's what we do, you know? It's been such a wonderful experience to have been invited and to have been asked to speak. I will say this. I've been thinking about what the hell I'm going to say for like 3 weeks. What'll I say? What should I say? Could I say it? What won't I say? So I know this thing is over now, and what the hell am I going to think about for the rest of my life? Look, they told me when you stand up here, you won't be able to see anybody. Well, I do. I see you. And I've been seeing you since Wednesday night when I got here. You are beautiful. You arrived from all over the world. Some of us are in wheelchairs and on canes. And it warms me to see what we won't do to get to be with each other. This is it. This is it. My friend Charles W. told me in the very beginning, because I was on, maybe some of you might be NA curious. You may be on the fence. I don't know. You know, but we're here to, not to convince. We're here to share our stories. And Charles said, look, it's as though you're on a desert island, right? And you're all tattered, torn, messed up, and then somebody gorgeous walks through the island and comes, and they got creases in their jeans, and they got furniture in their mouth, and their hair's combed. And they look at you in your and they extend their hand and say, come with me, I know a way out of here. So I'm just gonna say this in closing. Stay with God and come with us, because we know the way out of here. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. Thank you for giving us that message. Thank you. Let us thank our speakers one more time, Wilhelmine and Billy. I am Shranda, and I am an addict. I'm from the Chesapeake and Potomac region, D.C. area, yes. Yes, before we leave, I'm going to ask Nikki from Philly to read We Do Recover.
I'm a grateful recovering addict named Nicole. Hey! We do recover. When at the end of the road, we find that we can no longer function as human beings, either with or without drugs, we all face the same dilemma. What is there left to do? There seems to be this alternative, either go on as best we can to the better ends, jails, institutions, or death, or find a new way to live. In years gone by, very few addicts ever had this last choice. Those who are addicted today are more fortunate. For the first time in man's entire history, a simple way has been proven itself in the lives of many addicts. It is available to us all. This is a simple spiritual, not religious program known as Narcotics Anonymous.
Hello, as you're walking out the door, let's close the meeting with the third step prayer. Take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, show me how to live.